Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is June 2nd, 2015. It's my mom's birthday, and so we have to be extra good behavior today. We're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 777 relating to savings accounts for disability-related expenses. We're going to have some public testimony. We honored with a senator here today, but I'm going to turn this over to John first to tell us a little bit about Senate Bill 777.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. As background for the measure relates to savings accounts for disabled-related expenses. They're achieving a Better Life Experience Act. The ABLE Act became federal law in December of 2014. The act permits the creation of tax-free state-based savings accounts to pay for disability-related expenses. Expenses qualified as disability-related if they are for the benefit of the individual and with a disability and are related to the disability. As far as the measure overview for Senate Bill 777B, the measure is effective on the 91st day with an operative date for the 2015 tax year. It directs the Oregon 529 Savings Board to establish by rule a qualified state ABLE program, allows persons with disabilities to establish savings accounts for disability-related expenses, excludes both contributions to and distributions from the account from federal taxable income, limits tax exempt contributions to those made before the beneficiary of the account attains the age of 21, provides for taxation of distributions that are not qualified for disability expenses, adds a representative to the with disabilities to the Oregon 529 Savings Board. The Savings Board is formerly the Oregon 529 College Savings Board. Assumes accounts will be held in trust by third-party investment advisors, and fees would come from a portion of the private third-party investment administrator charges on individual accounts and transferred to the 529 Savings Network Fund. The fiscal impact, Section 24 of the measure includes another fund's expenditure limitation of $896,391, two positions, 1.50 FTE. The revenue impact, there is a revised revenue impact on OLIS. The revenue impact for 2015-17 is $180,000 and $510,000 for the 17-19 biennium.
Perfect. All righty, so we're going to get our testimony list up here. Senator, come on up.
May I bring Michael Parker with me?
Yeah, of course. You can bring anyone you want with you. Welcome.
Thank you.
The microphone's yours. Share with us what we need to know.
Thank you so much, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Senate District 8, which includes Albany, Corvallis, and the surrounding areas. I'm very happy to bring Senate Bill 777 to you. It's come to you after passing unanimously through both the House, through the Senate Human Services and Housing Committee. It's not the Housing Committee. Can I start over?
Sure.
It's the state Human Services and Early Childhood Committee, that's what we call it in the Senate, and the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. Senate Bill 777 comes to us because Congress did something absolutely extraordinary last year. They passed legislation, and it was signed into law. And that was a piece of law. This ABLE legislation is something that's been worked on for more than a decade, and it's trying to resolve a problem. Right now, individuals with disabilities can never have more than $2,000 in assets at any one time without losing their disability-related benefits. The consequence of that is that when you, as a parent, have a child with a disability, you're in the delivery room and they hand you this beautiful baby that happens to have Down syndrome, everyone tells you, do not save a penny for this child. Because if you save any money for that child, they will have more than $2,000 when they turn 18, and they will then not be eligible for employment support, for support services, brokerage services, all of those other services that we know that individuals need to live independently in the community. So what Congress did was to allow states to establish 529 savings plans, very similar to the 529 college savings plans, that you can save in for individuals individuals with severe disabilities that manifest before the age of 26. And the assets in that account do not count towards the asset test for service eligibility until you hit $100,000. Once you have $100,000 in that account, you start to lose your Social Security disability payments, but you can still receive support services if those are needed to continue living in the community. Now, the catch with the, and there's a clawback, so when the individual then dies, that money that's remaining in that trust doesn't go to that individual's family. It goes to repay the public for the services that have been provided. The catch with this was that Congress said individual states had to allow their citizens to save. So nobody can save money under this plan until their state legislature acts. And that is what Senate Bill 777 does. It would establish the 529 ABLE savings plans in the state of Oregon so that people could start saving here. Some amendments that you have before you would also make it clear that another state could give permission to its citizens to invest in our state, which is a great thing because that will bring the fees down for those that participate. The more people you have, the lower the fees that are there. This is a great bill that really will allow people to be more independent. Co-Chair Buckley urged us not to bring all the advocates to talk to you about all the things they would like to spend their money on, but just a couple of high points. We heard from a mom. For her, passing 777 means that she can go back to her attorney because they had to write her daughter out of their will. They would like to include her in their will. For an adult with disabilities who has a wheelchair that has a stander function on it, Medicaid and her private insurance will not cover the repair to that stander function. She would be able to save enough money from the money she is earning by working her own money to be able to make that wheelchair repair. We heard from someone else with a developmental disability. This would allow them to save money that they have earned, again, their own money that they've earned from working, to pay first and last month rent so they can move out of their parents' house and live independently. So what we're really talking about is giving people the capacity to save their own money, meet their own financial goals for some pretty modest purposes. And Michael's here to talk about the mechanics of the program, how it will work, how we'll pay for it. And then one last thing on the revenue impact. The money is allowed to grow tax-free for everyone. That's the federal benefit. Right now, in our Oregon 529 College Savings Plan, when a parent makes an investment for their child, we provide a statewide tax benefit, and we're trying to urge more people to sign up in that plan. This bill, that $180,000 revenue impact, comes from we would provide the same tax benefit for disabled children as we do to parents for their non-disabled children to save, and that's what that revenue impact is.
Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Senator Hayward. Members of the committee, Michael Parker, director of the 529 College Savings Network. I'm just going to talk briefly about how we want to structure the program. I'll take a step back and talk about the College Savings Plan for a second. As you may or may not know, the College Savings Plan started back in 2001. And what we did initially with that program is we took a loan from the legislature and started the program up. The program then was meant to be self-sustaining over time, which obviously it is now. So we took the loan, made the program self-sustaining, and then paid the loan back. We want to structure this program much in the same way. Take a small loan, get the program up and running, and then pay that loan back over time. The goal then would be to have the ABLE Act be a self-sustaining program, just like the College Savings Plan is right now. So that's how that would be structured. Again, as LFO staff had mentioned, it's going to be housed with our board, the College Savings Network board, or run out of our office at the Treasury. The current idea here is to hire two positions to help run this program. We believe currently that in order to really maximize our ability to get folks into this program and understand the program, we really have to have some boots on the ground. Doing a mass media marketing and advertising campaign on a go-forward basis probably isn't going to be very effective. We really need to work with the constituencies out there and their partners to really make folks understand how this program can benefit them over time. So that's really where the fiscal comes in. We want to hire folks to do that work. Right now, the fiscal contemplates two positions. And I know we talked about an $890,000 fiscal impact. We have looked at this, and just by virtue of just how the revenue impact is going to go, the program likely, upon if the plan passes. Very likely won't even get started until late 16, early 17. So the fiscal impact for this bill, we figured, well, we don't really need to hire the folks right away because they're not really going to have anything necessarily to do. So we reduced the fiscal down from 890 to about 665,000. So we got that fiscal down a good couple hundred thousand dollars. So that I think that helps a little bit. Again, those folks would probably be hired sometime around summertime of next year. And that really will depend on how we're doing to get the program up and running. So we're contemplating to do it as quickly as possible. But just knowing having to negotiate contracts, set the plan up, get all the legal services that are going to be done, having to basically interpret the federal law to set our administrative rules, it's going to take a lot of effort. And so we really don't need the outreach and marketing folks that are going to be on the ground until really the program gets close to being started. So that could easily be, you know, January of 17. So that fiscal can be reduced for the 15-17 biennium. So that's where that fiscal comes from. And again, I think it would make a lot of sense for us to take that loan from the College Savings Network Operating Fund.
Pardon me, I just didn't hear you.
College Savings Network.
The College Savings Operating Fund. Sorry, Senator. We've gotten the AG to say that we can run both of these programs, the College Savings Program and the ABLE Program, under the same trust that we currently operate now. So we would borrow from the College Savings Network Operating Fund and then start the program up and running and then pay that back over time as assets increase and the program becomes self-sustaining.
So let me ask a question on that. One of the critiques I've heard is that by borrowing from that fund that we're actually borrowing other people's money. Is that accurate? Can you address that issue?
Sure. Co-Chair Smith, it's not borrowing other people's money because we're not borrowing from the trust. We're borrowing from the current operating fund. So that money is going to be there regardless of whether we borrow it or not. So we're not borrowing from your assets that you're investing. We're borrowing from the money that is paid into operating fund to operate the College Savings Network. Again, it is a loan. It's not a gift. We're planning on paying that money back over time.
And what would the rate of interest be that would be paid back with that loan?
Well, I'm planning to do it interest-free if possible.
We'll go Senator Johnson, then Senator Whitson.
It begs the question, how did you get so much money in your operating fund?
Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Steiner, Hayward, Senator Johnson, we charge 5 basis points annually to operate the program. So over the last 15 years or so, we've accumulated operating revenue. We did reduce our operating expense from 10 basis points to 5 basis points back in 2012, I think. So we cut our operating fund in half because, you know, we're not a for-profit institution, but we keep a little bit of money in there just as a contingency, just like any business likely would do.
Let's define, follow up, a little bit of money.
I think right now in our operating fund we have about, I'm going to guess, about $1.5 million in the contingency, about right about that amount.
For some of us, that is not a little bit of money.
Senator Whitson.
A couple questions for John. What's the roll-up cost on this in 17-19?
Co-chair, and Senator, the roll-up cost for 17-19 is eliminated one-time cost would be $673,673 and 2 positions, 2 FTE.
Okay, thank you. And what is the time frame for the repayment of this interest-free loan?
Co-chair and Senator, the measure is silent on repayment, so it is unspecified.
Mr. Chair, just on the issue of interest-free, I think a little bit of history is important. The 529 College Savings Plan that is now established was established through a loan. That loan was repaid, and it also was interest-free.
So from my perspective, this is a good program. The funding source has to be changed. To say it's not other people's money, it is other people's money. If you weren't going to loan it to this other program, you could put it back in the trust fund and have it ready and make interest or, you know, have a return on investment. I mean, you can't spend it twice. And there's no, you know, if you need $1.5 million in that fund, you can't loan it to somebody else. And if you don't need $1.5 million in that fund, you should give it back to the people and let it increase interest. So, you know, you could do that by getting a loan, as you did from the 529, to start it up from the legislature. actually using the people's money, not individuals' money. Or you could go to the Fairview Trust, and perhaps that's not allowed within the current law, but that's what we do in this building is make law. Yeah, notwithstanding ORS yada yada, we will loan X many dollars for this period of time for tax, interest free or at whatever interest rate is possible. There's other ways to get that money. I don't think we can use other people's money to do it.
Co-chairs, Senator Whitsitt, honestly, we're happy to discuss other ways to borrow the money, and in fact, if you also wanted us to pay, right now my operating fund sits in the short-term fund, so we would be happy to pay the interest on that money that would be in the short-term fund now. So it doesn't have to be an interest-free loan. We did take the money from the legislature, from the general fund, back in 2001 to set up the 529 plan. That was an interest-free loan, as Senator Gelser had mentioned. But again, I'm not wedded to necessarily borrowing it from my operating fund. I was just trying to make sure that we didn't impact potentially the general fund or another source of money that we didn't need to impact. So that's open for discussion. My only concern is if we're to borrow it from another fund, that because we don't know the rate of growth on this program, that I would be wary to say, well, the terms are going to be very specific, has to be paid back in, a few years, because at the end of the day, we have a smaller pool of investors here, obviously. It's not just college savers. So I want to be careful not to put too many sideboards on it, because if we can't pay it back in a very short time period, that would be, I think, a potential problem.
Senator Johnson.
I also want to say I'm very supportive of the program, and I talked to Senator Gelser about this. It makes all the sense in the world to me, but I wish to be associated with Senator Whitsitt's concerns about using other people's money. I think you absolutely are using other people's money, and I would prefer to change the law around the Fairview Trust, because I think there's a nexus. And if we're going to pay it back, there shouldn't be any concern that the trust is going to get ripped off. Now, I know that Senator Gelser will say the Fairview Trust has already been abused previously, but I think we can inoculate against that happening. And I would just share with you, colleagues, one of the reasons that Dogami is in a mess right now is that they dipped into other people's money and used it for general operating purposes, and the agency is broke. I think setting the precedent that it is okay to take other people's money is unacceptable. If the policy argument here is sound and it's going to be repaid, then either advance it from the general fund, because I believe that it is general public good that it's paying for, or change the Fairview Trust and build sufficient sideboards to assure you're going to get repaid.
May I? Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, thank you for the comments, and thank you also for the conversation that we had about this previously. You previewed my comments quite well. I'm not wedded to the loan coming from the savings plan. I'm open to other things. I am very uncomfortable with taking the loan from the Fairview Trust. The reason for that is that for those affordable housing purposes in the Fairview Trust, you can only use the interest that's generated off of that. We just unanimously passed a bill through both chambers of the House that is moving the Fairview Trust from the short-term basis fund to the medium basis fund, which means that loan from, or the use of that money from the Fairview Trust would be more expensive than from the, we would lose more money over time. It would cost more to do it because of that lost opportunity in terms of the rate of the return. The other thing that I'm concerned about is because we have rated the Fairview Trust so often, we have really depleted that principal, which we need to start growing. And this is a significant percentage of that overall piece. I'm comfortable with a general fund loan or from some other place. Like I said, I'm not wedded to this one. I do have significant concerns about the Fairview Trust. And lastly, the population is broader than the Fairview Trust. There's also you could make the same nexus with 529, their parents and kids and people that want to save. You've met one disabled person, you've met one disabled person.
Please follow up.
I don't disagree with some of what you've said, and I certainly think the penchant in this building to pilfer money that came for specific purposes, I would cite as Exhibit A, stealing $2 million plus dollars from the Cultural Trust in the name of sweeps. I can promise you that when I wrote my check to the Cultural Trust, it was not as a budget balancer for the general fund. But my point is that if this body lacks the discipline to keep on saying it's okay to pinch expedient money, I just think that's fundamentally wrong. And if we're going to stop the abuses that come with sweeps, there ought to be a nexus between the money and the purpose. And we ought to have memories that are longer than just a nod and a wink among colleagues and poof, somebody's gone and everything disappears. I was asked when Senator Starr was here last session to make money available to a House colleague for a purpose that we were going to get back. $9 million vaporized. And so I think memories in this building are exceptionally short, and if it's good enough to agree to, it's good enough to write down. So I think your concerns about the trust being ripped off can be assuaged by proper documentation of legislative intent to have that loan repaid.
And Chair Smith, Senator Johnson, I'm not, my concern isn't about it being ripped off. I'm confident that the money will be repaid. And I'm very comfortable. I had a conversation with Co-Chair Buckley last week or the week before about some amendments that I understand that John is writing that make very clear kind of the separation of the accounts and how money will be repaid. My concern with the Fairview Trust isn't a ripoff. It is the loss of that account for a different purpose over time because of the impact on that principal at a time we have just committed as a legislature to reinvest that money in a place that actually generates interest, which it hasn't, and we've asked the Secretary of State to do an audit about whether or not we have been consistent with the initial purposes. I think the difference between, and I agree that it was wrong to take the cultural trust money, I'm not defending that, but I think that there's a difference between when a check was written to the cultural trust and the inherent promise that is behind the Fairview Trust, where you've got this history of abuse and death and rape and forced sterilization. I mean, that is so symbolic to this very specific part of the community, and to continue that raid session after session, this would be another one of those.
I would step outside of the realm of symbolism and say that this is a legal contractual deal. We are a Ways and Means Committee. We are the fiscal stewards of the state's budget. And I think that you can inoculate against that. You can also build in an interest program that makes up the difference that you're talking about between the short-term fund and the long-term fund, rather than just going for expedient no-interest money. I understand the symbolism. I understand that there are certain segments of the population in Oregon for whom certain events are absolutely catastrophically raw. Slilo Falls. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But I think we've got to transcend worrying about symbolism and worry about financial transactions at this point and what makes sense.
And Chair Smith, Senator Johnson.
Just share one last thought, please.
Yes, one last thought. Clearly you are the Ways and Means Committee. As a policy person, as legislators, I think we also have a responsibility to be the guardians of the conscience of the state. At the same time, we're fiscally responsible. I also think it would be inappropriate and unequal to say that for non-disabled children, when we set up the 529 plan, we gave an interest-free loan. That is what we did for a much larger, much more expensive program for people that frankly had other options. There were other places that they could invest. To put a different standard on this population of individuals, to say for non-disabled people, we did not charge interest, but for disabled people, we will, I don't think that's an appropriate financial or policy decision.
Then take a no interest loan from the general fund.
So Representative Taylor.
And I'm fine with that.
So thank you, colleagues. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Just more of a technical question. So what other funding options did you look at in order to get the program launched? I was just wondering.
Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Taylor, really none. We really contemplated the fact that the network has this operating fund that is sitting there that we thought was and still think is available to use. Mm-hmm. So we didn't want to impact the general fund. At least I didn't want to impact the general fund. So we didn't look at any other options.
Please. Thank you, Co-Chair Smith. Did you by any chance have conversations with your colleagues in the Treasury Department? Just looking, who could you go to in the Treasury Department to see other funding sources, since Senator Gelser is not opposed to another source?
Sure. Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, Representative Taylor. There would be an option, as I understand it. I have talked to folks in the Treasury about potentially interfund loan that would cost the floor on an interfund interagency borrowing is 2%. But again, this not I'm not privy to how that all works at this point, so legally I don't even know if that is possible.
That was going to be my follow-up question. Right. Did DOJ tell you what your legal options were, right? Legally what you could do?
They did not tell me what my legal options were. I did talk with DOJ about borrowing it from the network operating fund, and because we're running these programs under a single trust, they deem that to be okay. I've asked them to give me information on interfund loan borrowing from the Fabry Trust or any other agency operating fund.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify. Okay. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. We appreciate your comments. Thank you very
thank you.
Much.
Thank you, Representative.
Do we have anyone else who would like to speak today? This is the opportunity. We're in a public hearing. Great opportunity to hear from the public. All righty. Any other comments from the subcommittee before I close this public hearing? All right, going once, going twice. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 777. John, any last-minute thoughts for us?
Thank you, Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. Tomorrow, a work session on House Bill 3099, so you should look for the work session materials and an amendment for the measure that we posted, and Sean McSpadden will come in and join you tomorrow afternoon.
Perfect. All righty. Colleagues, any other thoughts or questions?
Representative Smith, I just wanted to share with the committee that I've been working with LC and the Secretary of State's office and DAS and Judiciary about the Senate Bill 55, and along with Senator Whitsitt and Representative Gomberg, and we'll be sending out an update pretty soon. And I just wanted to share that with folks so we continue to hopefully have everyone's support. So
cool. All righty. Colleagues, we are going to adjourn for the day. Julie, are we going to adjourn for the day? Julie, are we? All righty. Colleagues, we are.